Hi, welcome to another episode of the Transformations with Jane podcast. I'm Jane Nakata, your host, creator of Jumpstart and the Woman in Japan Mastermind. So thank you for listening again today. And I'm very excited because when you're listening to this episode, it means that we are celebrating the 1 year anniversary of the Transformations with Jane podcast. I cannot believe that we have actually made it through a whole year of podcasting, because when I started back in March, 1 year ago, I just had this teeny tiny goal that I would record 10 episodes and see what happened. And I went into the closet at my mother's house in New Zealand with my iPhone and my headphones with the mic on it, and I recorded my first episode. I actually recorded quite a few interviews from that closet as well, but somehow it worked, and I'm so grateful that to have so many listeners out there now who really look forward to the episode. So thank you so much for your support over this last year. Now to celebrate, I wanted to do something really special for my listeners. So, and I'd also like to ask for your help to spread the word about the Transformations with Jane podcast. So I have created a 1 year anniversary celebration team. So if you'd like to join this team, then please go to the link in the show notes, get on the list, and you will get all the information delivered to your inbox, how you can join in the celebration, how you can share the podcast and help other people to find out about it, and also how you can be in to win the very, very awesome prize that I have for you. Now, this prize is so awesome. Yeah, you're going to have to join to find out about it, though. I'm being a bit sneaky, aren't I? But it really is an awesome prize. So I do want people who are motivated in helping to share about the podcast to come and help me celebrate the 1 year anniversary. So definitely jump into the show notes, click on the link, sign up, and you will instantly get the information delivered to you how you can take part in the celebration. It's going to be exciting. So on to today's episode, which is with Emilia Bergoglio. I hope I've said that right. I'm sorry. I've been practicing. She is this wonderful, wonderful woman from Italy who has been living in Tokyo for 4 years now. And she's studying neuroscience. She's doing her PhD in neuroscience at Tokyo University, which is very awesome in itself. Even though she said to me, oh, you know, there's nothing special about me. I'm like, what? Anyway, so she is doing her PhD in neuroscience. And she's been here for 4 years now, but she's also very passionate about the impact that the fashion industry is having on our environment. And so something that she started out with as a hobby has become kind of her reason for being almost. Yeah. So she started by sewing on her own clothes, and now she creates pieces from kimono that have been, sold to recycling shops. She makes things out of, textiles that have no commercial value anymore. So if you pop over to her Instagram, you'll be able to see some of the very cool things that she makes. So I hope you enjoy this episode talking to Emilia. And I hope you will take on some of her ideas that she has for how we can be more aware of the impact that our choices around fashion and our daily life choices are making on the environment, and do your small part, because all of those small parts definitely add up to something really big. So I hope you enjoy this interview.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome to the Transformations with Jane's podcast, Amelia. It's great to have you on the show today.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Yeah, so exciting. And so whereabouts are you talking to us from today?
So my lab in Tokyo, in Hongo to be more specific.
Your lab in Tokyo. I have not had a podcast guest recording from a lab before. Yeah?
Yeah, so directly from the University of Tokyo.
Wow, that's very, very cool. So what do you do there? What, like, why are you hanging out in a lab at the University of Tokyo?
So I'm a PhD student in neuroscience. I'm a biologist and I work with some animal models and I'm especially interested in neurodevelopmental disorders like autism and schizophrenia. So I study like genes and proteins involved, which may or may not be involved in these diseases. I mean, to make the long story short. So yeah, so I hang out in a lab a lot.
Yeah, so how did you come to be in Japan and at Tokyo University studying neuroscience?
I did my master's degree in Trieste. I'm from Italy, so Trieste is a town in the northeast. And the degree was international, so we were all encouraged to go abroad for our thesis. And I was looking around and didn't know where to go. I didn't have any particular preference. And I started sending emails. And one email I sent to Riken, which is a famous research in institute in Japan that has several campuses. And the boss of this lab was like, sure, come anytime. And I was like, okay, why not? I will come. And that was like in 2015, between 2015 and 2016. And I liked it. When I went back, I graduated and I went to do a PhD. In the meantime, I got married. And I decided to come back and see what happened and found a PhD position and never went back, basically. Now I'm here.
So are you planning to be here like long term?
Yeah, that's the idea. My husband and I kind of like it here. You can have of course there are problems. It's not the perfect place, but we like our lives here and we like Japan. And he likes the Japanese language. I don't understand that, but But yeah, so we're planning to stay.
Oh, so he's obviously not Japanese.
No, he's American.
No, he's American. So it's kind of a middle of the, you're both making some, you know, you're both not in your home country. Yeah, you're both living abroad. It's kind of nice in that respect that, you know, both people are making some, what's the word? I can't even think of the English word.
I don't know, but yeah, I kind of like the fact that we came without baggage, so to speak, we both don't have families here. Our families are at the other side of the world in both cases, and so it's just like the two of us, and we don't have to play by any rules, just our rules, and of course, like, you know, Japanese law.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just the two of us, and that's very freeing and nice.
Yeah, so how do you get on with living in Japan wherein neither of you are like local to the country? Is there anything that comes up for you that you struggle with?
How can I put this and be politically correct? Sometimes I struggle with the fact that, so I work in a scientific environment and still, despite English being the language of science, the level is very low. So I'm not saying that when I go outside and, I don't know, go to the company, I never expect them to know any English. Mm-hmm. And actually, I expect them to talk to me in Japanese. And when they don't, I'm a bit like, why?
Yeah.
Just because I'm a foreigner. But at least in the lab, sometimes I'm a bit frustrated.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, I realized this with myself when I came here. I had all sorts of ideas about how it was going to be. But ultimately, I just try to have my mind open and try to understand where people come from, culturally especially. And many things are done differently than where I am from or where I mean, Japan is not the first foreign country I live in, but they were all European countries and we're all kind of similar. So I just try to accept like the differences and I'm all about dialogue. So if what I don't accept is that sometimes there is a wall and people just tell me, oh, no, this is the way it is. It has always been done. And they don't kind of give me any motive or reason behind it. So that it's something I struggle with. But if there's dialogue, then it's everything gets better. And we both give each other the chance to understand where we're coming from. I don't know if that answers your question.
No. And it's interesting you mentioned the wall, because there are a lot of walls in Japan that us foreigners cannot see until we crash into one.
Yes, exactly.
This, you know, invisible barrier or wall that all the Japanese people know is there.
Yes.
But
they don't tell you about it.
And they don't tell you about it because they don't necessarily... Well, they don't know that you don't know that it's not there, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's not that they're not telling you about it. It's just that they just assume that you know there's a wall there and that you should just turn around and go back, yeah? But until you crash into one, then you're like, oh, what? I can't do this or whatever, you know? So,
yeah. Oh, there was a wall. Oh, my bad. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot. Like, I'm crashing into fewer and fewer walls these days. It does, you start to realize where they could potentially be in the future once you've had a few of these things happen to you. Yeah. So it gets easier, I do feel. You start to be able to anticipate where they might actually be. And if you check, then you say, it is the same. There, that is not okay or whatever. So it does get easier, definitely.
Yeah, I guess when you get more acquainted, and I think it's also strongly dependent on your language ability. Because if you kind of understand what goes, so for example, I'm Italian, we're very transparent, except where I'm from, where people are really like not really talking the way, I mean, not really saying what they mean, but generally speaking, Italians are very transparent. And my Japanese is not at the level where I can read between the lines.
Of course, yeah.
So it just takes everything at face value.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, if you kind of get into, have a cultural understanding of the language, that helps avoiding the multiple invisible walls.
Mm. And it just takes time. I mean, like you said, your first trip here was when?
2015. Yeah.
So that's 4 years ago. Okay.
Yeah, basically.
So you're still like new.
Yes, you know? I'm still new. Yeah.
Still new in the scheme of things. Yeah. So even I still feel quite, you know, relatively new at 16 years, you know. So, and as soon as you enter another area of your life, in the moment you're in the academic world and it has its rules, but if you took a step out of that and you went somewhere else, then there's a whole lot of, you know, now you have to sort of reassess again, right? So, so much to learn. This complicated country that we live in. Yeah.
But I kind of think that probably every place is complicated, but I didn't say that this is the biggest divide one can find, like between European country, Western country, and Japan.
Yeah. So I have to say, like I came to Japan first, and then my husband and I were sent to Germany for 3 years. And so for that transition was super easy. But if I'd gone from New Zealand straight to Germany, I probably would have struggled. But since I came to Japan first and then I went to Germany, I was like, no worries. You got rules?
Easy.
I can do rules. Yeah. Your rules, nothing. Yeah. I can see the rules. Yeah. In Germany, it's very clear what the rules are. But in Japan, it's like, they're quite invisible often. So, yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So you are not just a PhD student. Tell us a little bit about your, in Japan it's called a fukugyo. Would you consider it your fukugyo, your side hustle?
My side hustle, yes. Fukugyo is so much better than side hustle. So as a fukugyo, I make clothing from dead stock, so materials which are like either end of bald or out of production with basically no commercial value, and old kimono. Mm. And I do so in, so everything is made to order. So you see it, you like it, you order it, and I make it. Or in the case of the kimono remake, I use a zero waste approach. So I take apart the kimono and I reuse every single piece, including the lining and the buttons.
Wow.
Make something new, which will be like one of a kind. And I also, in this case, you see it and you like it and you buy it and I just send it to you.
And okay.
Hopefully it will not smell of mothballs.
A lot of those kimonos have been like hiding in closets and things for years, haven't they? And
such a waste.
That's right.
Yeah.
So wasteful to have those beautiful, beautiful fabrics just like hiding away and not being used. Yeah. Some people like say, oh, no, you can't cut it up. That's terrible, but I feel like cut it up, remake it, use it, give it a life, go for it. Like, how do you feel about that?
Oh, actually, I don't even cut it up. I just unseam it.
You just unpin it, right?
Yeah. I just take the seams apart because the kimono is just a bunch of rectangles of different shapes and lengths I put together. So, but the thing is that this kimono I buy, they're all from the recycling shop. So these are items people have thrown away, actively thrown away. And I just take them. They're beautiful. And it's like, it's just so wasteful. I guess like my problem is that it's waste. And I see all this beautiful, I've accumulated lots of kimono since I've moved here because I just like them. And I wear kimono when I go to the theater or to an exhibition. And I just can't, understand how people would just like toss it. So I want to give this kimono a new life and hopefully they will bring joy into somebody else's life and have a second chance.
So do you also, you've like learned how to put on kimono yourself?
Yes.
Because that's quite a, drawn out process as well, isn't it? To be able to learn how to do that.
Luckily there's YouTube. I went on a rabbit hole of YouTube videos with this old, very stern-looking old obachan, telling you how to tie your obi in 15 different ways. It's just trial and error. Of course, there are schools you can go to, but I don't know. Like, I have a friend who went to a school, and my kimono and her kimono wearing techniques were not so dramatically different, so I'm not sure. If it's really like worth going. I don't know. I have never been.
Right. So you're self-taught. That's very cool. And in this day and age, YouTube is amazing. You can get all these videos. I remember like I studied kimono, what was this, like probably 15 years ago. YouTube didn't exist back then, right? Yeah. And I had a book. Well, I went to a class with a teacher and I could barely understand what she was saying. But somehow we got to the point where I could actually put on the actual kimono, but I couldn't quite tie the obi myself.
So
I got to that sort of point with the teacher. And then I had this book I was trying to learn from in my house. It just wasn't happening. So like a video would just be so much more.
Yeah. And also there are in English or in Japanese, there are many, many, many. And every style of obi, like from super formal to super informal, you can find as long as you know the name of the knot.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it's completely accessible these days. This, you know, if you want to wear a kimono, there's really no excuse, is there?
So
that's very cool. I should give it another go. It's been a while. I do like to wear them, but it's hard work getting them on, and then you feel like you're exhausted by the time you've got the damn thing on, and then you've got to go out.
and then you can't really walk on these small steps.
That's right. Or I'm gonna drive a car with one on. Oh my god, yeah. That's probably better than walking though, but that's the life here in Fukushima. We drive everywhere, so drive and park outside the store we want to shop at. Yeah. Not quite the same as Tokyo.
Yeah, here you walk everywhere.
So. Exactly, yeah. So you have this love of kimono and that helped you to sort of get started with, you know, making your own things from kimonos that have been effectively thrown away, right?
Yeah.
So what do you make with them?
So like lately I've been big on separates because there is in a kimono, there's enough fabric to make a top and a skirt or some loose pants. So then also it depends on, it really varies. So sometimes I see the kimono, I fall in love with it and I buy it. And then I think for like weeks, what am I going to do with you? Other times I have a vision in mind and I just look for some particular textile which will match this vision. So yeah, but generally like separates, or I'd like to make some light coat eventually if I find the right kimono. So these kind of things. And so far I've only had scraps once, and with the scraps I made a pair of suspenders for my husband.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. All sorts of things you can make. There would be some cool suspenders, like kimono pattern.
Yeah, they're, because it's some, what's the name? It's this kind of pongee silk, but I really forgot the name. Tsumugi, I think, in Japanese. And it's really gorgeous looking, and it's the same shade of green gray of his eyes. So it was really happy coincidence.
Wow. Sounds fantastic. That would be like a really cool, like, conversation starter, like if when he wears the braces around, like.
Like, oh, where did you buy them?
Yeah, where did you get them? And they're so original. And, well, my wife made them for me. What?
I've made him suspenders out of every possible thing, including tatami berry. We went to Okayama, like, last year, and I found the bargain bin of the tatami edging, and I went crazy. And I made all sorts of things, including several sets of suspenders with this tatami edging.
Right, the tatami edging.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard of it being made into things like bags, like handbags.
Yeah, like handles of bags, but you can make suspenders, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be at a very popular line for you in the future, suspenders of all different things, yeah?
Yeah, I should think about that.
Yeah, very, very cool. Yeah, so... tell us about your shop. What's it called?
Kintsugi, like Kintsugi, the art of putting together pottery with gold filling. Same thing here.
All right. So you're talking about when a bowl is like a little bit cracked.
Yeah.
And they repair it by putting gold in the crack or.
Yes, exactly. So because my entire idea is to find beauty in the. Items which are, in garbage, basically, or in things which are thrown away or discarded or forgotten. And I find that everything is beautiful, just needs a little bit of, you know, freshen up. And that's the same principle behind Kintsugi, the art. So you break your ball and instead of throwing it away, you fix it and you make something which is even more beautiful. And in addition, you fix your ball. So yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool. I was wondering about the name, you know, Kintsugi, and I didn't like, because even though, you know, I speak Japanese really well, not really well, reasonably well, I didn't know that that's what it's called when they repair the bowl with the gold, right? So, okay, that's where the Kintsugi comes from. And yeah, that's a beautiful background to have for the name of your business. Yeah. That's very, very cool. And so what's going to happen in the future with Kintsugi?
So I must admit that I'm a bit, how can I say, shy. So I've never really tried marketing that much myself or putting myself out there. But this year I decided that my goal for the year is to build expand my community. So I always end up talking with people who sew, and people who sew, they can sew, so they will not buy my clothes. And I'm trying, So I'm trying to, build a community of other entrepreneurs or just people who are interested in like what I'm doing, and talk to them, and expand my potential customer base. But even if I don't find customers, the thing I'm very passionate about is the so-called ethical fashion and supply chain transparency, workers' rights, all these kind of topics. So even if I can find people who will listen to me talking about this, it would be great already. And then more business-wise, I maybe should stop making items for me and make more items for my store. I've recently got involved with several small like markets, you know, like the kind of street markets or like area fair. And so it looks like I may be able to bring some items I made for sale. So that would probably help me a bit, I hope. Also, I would meet the Japanese people and show them my crafts, and that's very exciting, actually.
Yeah, how do Japanese people react to when they see what you've made?
So actually, it's kind of interesting because I did not by any means invent the idea of kimono remake. Many Japanese people have done it, but they talk to me and they're like, yeah, I know. And I took my furusode, my mother's furusode, and made the sleeves into a bag, for example. So they're familiar with the idea and they're kind of cool with it because they did not really think about remaking the kimono entirely in clothes. So at the beginning, especially older people, they're a bit taken aback, like, really, nani? Then I try to explain and like, right, because it's samotainai, right? So, oh yeah, it's actually a good idea. Yeah, too. And all the clothes I make are kind of loose. So, and sort of like, how can I say? They fit this kind of idea of like modern contemporary Japanese fashion more than like Western. So so far the reception among the Japanese population has been positive.
Yeah, like especially with the older generation, that concept of motainai is very strong,
very strong
with them.
Yes.
So I'm sure they really appreciate that you are bringing some life back to these, you know, wasted beautiful fabrics and things. I'm sure like your like upbringing in Italy and being surrounded by, you know, the fashion that is in Italy and bringing yes. your original sort of flavor to the Japanese fabric must have some interesting, you know, things come out of it.
Oh yeah, sometimes, yeah. My style is more, how can I say, is, if a Japanese grandma was sent to Scandinavia to live in a farm, kind of, or, I mean,
what?
Yeah. I mean, over the years, I've been told that my style is the love child of an Italian fashionista and a Japanese Zen monk. Actually, the best description is what the Victoria Close of Bhikkhu Design told me. What a Jedi would wear out for dinner.
What a what? Sorry?
What a Jedi. What a Jedi.
A Jedi. Oh, that's so cool.
And I was like, that's amazing. I'm so going with this description.
Yeah, I hope, got that on somewhere. Jedi would wear out for dinner.
Well, for dinner, yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, I mean, I think being Italian, I come from a place which is famous for wool weaving. And
right.
make all the wool and cashmere for suits. And especially Zegna, which is the most famous among all these brands, is from my same village. So many members of my family, especially in the paternal side, worked in the weaving industry. So I think what influenced me was mostly their sort of like menswear and tailoring side, not so much the fashion side. So I still like these kind of very structured garments with like very specific lines, and I like the rules because now there are no more rules. In fashion, you can wear whatever, but traditionally there are color matching rules or silhouette matching or like proportions, all these things. These are important. And I'm trying to kind of like incorporate this in what I do, though I like to dress like a Zen monk in some way. So, you know, there is a continuous power struggle.
Oh, that's so interesting. And like, you've never trained in this area at all?
Oh, no. I mean,
this is just your hobby.
Yeah, basically. I've been kind of sewing and a bit since childhood because we are strong in the make do and mend kind of ethos. So, you know, if something breaks, we would just fix it or take in your pants, or redo hems, this kind of stuff, but never actual garment sewing from begin to finish. Then I mean, when I moved to Japan and I was like in between finishing my master and starting my PhD, I had nothing to do and I was going insane. So I had to find a hobby. And as I mentioned before, I was involved in like ethical fashion, but could not afford Eileen Fisher or Elizabeth Susan, like highly coveted ethical fashion brands. Mm. I thought, how hard can it be? Come on. And I just bought a secondhand wash and sewing machine and started sewing.
Right.
And here we are.
Here we are. That's so cool. So what advice would you give to people who are, you know, interested in being more ethical about their fashion, about their clothing? Where do they start?
So first of all, try to wear your items more by even reusing any item you have of clothing. A few months more, you can significantly reduce the carbon footprint. And if you have to buy something, try first looking for secondhand shops. And in general, especially, just buy less. Because this is the major problem, actually, what created all these issues now with waste management, and it's the fact that we are now in this very consumeristic society, and we have stopped. We don't have the connection with our items anymore because everything is so abundant and cheap and all over the place. You can get anything at any time, anywhere. And so by consuming less, you will not break the economy, first of all. And you will do a service to the environment and also like other workers. So that's what, and if you do have to buy from like high street fast fashion, I mean, by all means, like don't stop shopping, but don't make an addiction out of it. So if you really need knickers and you find the knickers you love just from H&M, buy them. Just don't buy 100 of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, especially living in the countryside, I don't generally see clothing shops on a daily basis, yeah, where I live. And so when I do get to the big smoke, like Tokyo, I'm like, wow, shopping time. And then I'm like, yeah, but I don't actually need anything. You know, I have enough clothes. It's kind of like this, there's like a habit, yeah, of, oh, I like this, so I'll buy it, but I don't actually need it, yeah. And I actually wear, perhaps at the moment, I've got sort of three rotating outfits that I wear generally, and a whole closet full of clothes that I will only wear on special occasions. So yeah, it's very eye-opening when you realize, yeah, just how much money we are spending on things we don't need. Yeah,
I know. This is a very big problem for me because I also I own a business. So of course I want people to buy my things, but I want them to do that with consciously, yes. Not just because they're like, oh, it's so pretty. No, I want my clothes to have a message. And I will not be offended if somebody tells me, oh, I would like to buy this, but now I already have 15 dresses, so like, yeah. I'm oppressed. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fair enough. I mean, at least you're honest.
Yeah. And, you know, in Tokyo, there are some great events happening like the clothes swap that,
yes,
yeah, where people can exchange clothes and freshen up your wardrobe without spending any money or, you know, buying things that, you know, brand new items and get, you know, great quality stuff. And that's actually where we met, isn't it?
Yes, we met there. Yeah, but I stalked you at the clothing swap. Very embarrassing.
Yeah, so at the clothes swap, I gave a little talk and I just sort of said, I'd love to hear from people who are here today. Please come up and tell me how you are being the change you want to see. And this is kind of my catchphrase, but it's something I feel is very important at the moment,
yes,
for us. And you actually had to stalk me.
Yeah, I stalked you literally. With me and Anna, this girl I met there. Also, we really wanted to talk to you, but you were always busy. So we, I don't know, like, it was really weird. We just kept following you everywhere until you were free.
Yeah, and then I was looking at the clothes and you guys came over and you introduced yourselves. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, you guys. I didn't realize that you wanted to talk to me for a while. I thought you were actually just talking to each other. And I was like, I didn't actually realize for a long time that you didn't, that you wanted to talk to me. And then you actually were very helpful in helping me to pick things, because I'm not great at picking things. Like, it's not something I enjoy. You really helped me to pick out some items, and I got some really cool things.
So yeah, I remember.
Yes. From now on. Mm.
Yes.
Especially when it's getting warmer, I've got some dresses and things I want to break out. It's going to be fun. And the next clothes swap is happening soon in Tokyo. And actually, by the time this episode comes out, it will have already finished. But it's been like complete. It's completely exploded, like with people wanting to come. Like it's full.
Yes. Now they really had to close.
They closed the registration for
registration earlier. Yeah, because they said like to stack entry, so don't come. Actually, it was very early when I went the first time, so that's dumb. Don't do that. So it starts at 2 and finishes at 5, and we have been told to maybe not all come at 2. Somebody should come at 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's right. So
there will be more clothes.
Actually, I found that, you know, later in the afternoon was also good as well. There were different stuff and things. So don't feel like you're missing out if you do come later. So the next one will be in the summer. So get that on your calendar as soon as it comes out, and click going if you're going. You can unclick going later if you find out you can't come, but otherwise you will sort of miss out. Yeah. So it's going to be a really popular event. And I'm actually really interested in starting a similar event up here where I live in Fukushima, because when I went to the clothes swap and I told my friends about it here afterwards, they're like, wow, that sounds great. We need to have something like that here. And I was like, really? Do you think like people in this area would also be into it? Because, you know, at the clothes swap in Tokyo, it's like 80% foreigners who are there swapping clothes, actually, isn't it? Yeah, there's not that many Japanese people. It's very much a foreign community event. There are some Japanese people who do come, though, and they sort of were like, yeah, it would work. And I was like, okay. So who knows what will happen up here. We may get one happening very soon. I hope so. It's a really fun event, I think. Mm.
Yeah, but I don't know. Now I've been talking with my cousin. I'm in an old Japanese lab. I'm the only foreigner. And I try to not educate them, but like talk about these things. And some, for example, of younger people like my age or so would be interested, for example. And because they like things, they're at least my Japanese friends here are kind of hoarders. No judgment, but they're kind of hoarders. And so they like to have new things, but they don't necessarily have the disposable income.
Yeah.
And I guess they're symptomatic of a new movement in Japanese, in the Japanese population, I guess. So yeah, totally go for it. And I think the clothing swap here in Tokyo is mostly targeting foreigners also, because all the ads and the community is all in English.
That's right. Yeah.
Mostly.
It's not like Japanese people would necessarily get the information about the event, so that's why they're not there. Yeah, exactly.
So possible. So I think you should totally do that in rural Fukushima. I mean, if I were nearby, I would totally come.
Well, you should come. It's only 2 hours away.
Last 2 weeks ago, I went to Sendai. I have a dear friend in Sendai. She's also a PhD student, but she works with rice. And then I went to Sendai to visit her, and it's like 2 hours only. And Sendai is further than Fukushima, so I thought, maybe.
Yeah, it is. But you can take the bullet train to Sendai, which does help. We don't have one that comes here. But anyway, it's 2 hours, 2 and a bit hours to get here. So not that far. It's a nice day trip. Mm. Yeah, and we have onsens here as well. So you can go on the onsen and then head back to Tokyo.
And I think Fukushima has some specific textile. Now I'm very obsessed with Japanese textiles because every single, well, like most of the Ken and also many places, I mean, different cities in the same within the same prefecture have their own special textiles. Like Okinawa is 406, but yeah, but they're Ryukyu, so they're different. And I think Fukushima also has some special textile, which I forgot, obviously I have to check.
I think you're right, and it's probably in the Aizu area, which is the very mountain middle of
maybe
away from the sea. I'm on the seaside here. Over in the mountains, I think they do have their own sort of textile and things there. Yeah. Okay, well, who knows what will happen now that we may have a clothes swapping event happening in Fukushima sometime in the near future. But yeah, I really do love how there is a movement coming, you know, up more and more of let's just use what we have. We don't always have to go and buy something new, and let's exchange things and enjoy each other's stuff as well. And that's good too. Let's remake things that into something even better than it was before, potentially, and give it a new life and a new purpose. Yeah, that's so awesome. So any final words before we end our episode today?
So I'd like to encourage all the listeners to implement the three R's. So
three R's
being reduce, reuse, and recycle. And especially remember that recycling should be your last resort. First, try to reduce the need for new virgin materials by, for example, bringing your own cup if you take coffee from the company, or bring your own paper bag or cloth bag, these kind of small actions. And then if you're sick and tired of something, just rehome it. Don't throw it away. Do your own swaps. Ask your friends if they want to like exchange items. Not just clothing, like anything can be done. And yeah, just like be conscious and responsible, because we don't live in vacuum, and all of our actions have repercussions somewhere else, not necessarily in front of us, but yeah. And also remember that as a customer or consumer, you have a great power. So you can vote with your wallet and give a message to companies which support your beliefs, or which don't support your belief if you don't buy from them. That's it. And thank you for having me on this podcast. Okay, to wrap it up.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to remember that it's recycling is the last resort. It's not, I can recycle this, so it's okay to buy it. Yeah.
Yeah, because especially many things like PET bottles, for example, they cannot be recycled in new PET bottles because PET is semi-porous. So you can only recycle it down the chain, not at the same level. And I think that's like, and also like for PET can only be recycled if it's like clean. So I see many people in my own apartment building where I'm my husband, we are the only foreigners. So some Japanese people in the building don't wash the containers, don't peel the labels and all these things to make it then impossible for the objects to be recycled.
Right. And,
because
they still think they're recycling.
Yeah, they still, because they separate, but because I understand that they don't see their recycling and waste disposal is kind of like a far away thing. Because the gummy is taken away at night or early in the morning, you don't see it. So you think once you have disposed of the item, it's not your problem anymore, but it is actually. I would really like to organize trips to landfill or recycling and waste disposal centers, so we can all like, you know, understand the gravity of the situation.
And like when I talk to people like, you know, here in Japan about it, they're like, yeah, but I'm recycling, and you know, and I'm like, yeah, that's great, but what about just not using it in the first place? That would be even better. But you know, actually what you think you're recycling is actually just being put into landfill now, because potentially not even being recycled, even though you're separating for example, those harder plastics and the soft plastics, there's nowhere for them to go even to be recycled these days. So sometimes they're just being burnt, or, you know, like the you think it's being recycled, but it's not. So they're like, really? Oh my goodness. So a lot of people, yeah, really do not know what happens to their trash once it's
Yes. And it's not like bad will, it's just ignorance. So
we just don't know.
We just don't know exactly. So, and if you know, you have a duty to inform others.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, all right. So thank you so much for coming along and talking to me today. And thank you so much for being brave and actually reaching out and saying, hey, I want to be a guest on your podcast. So I really applaud bravery. And I know you said that, you know, you were a bit nervous about doing it. So now that you've done it, what's your message to anyone who's thinking about being on the Transformations podcast?
Oh yeah, just go for it. No, this is really out of my comfort, because this really says something nobody understands, because I'm Italian and I'm kind of sociable, but I'm not social. So like talking to someone, it's really out of my comfort zone, especially because I don't think I'm that impressive. So I'm like, why do people listen to me? I mean, but if you have a message you care about, then you should just go for it. And there will be somebody else who understands and will listen to you, and you will have made an impact.
Exactly. And what's the worst that could happen, right? I could have said no.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just want everyone to hear that, you know, like, you know, even if you're a little bit scared or worried or think that you have nothing interesting to say, it's complete rubbish. So please do just, reach out to me and say, hi, I want to be on the podcast. So I'll be more than happy to talk to you about what we could potentially talk about on the podcast together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really excited. You're being the change you want to see, Emilia. And I love the clothes that you have on your online store. So everyone pop over and check out Kintsugi on Instagram and see the very cool Jedi. What is it? Jedi going out for dinner clothes. It's such a great explanation. Thank you, Victoria from Biku Designs, for that way of explaining the fashion.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Much better than Love Child of Italian Fashionista and a Japanese Buddhist Monk.
Yeah, okay. We're moving up.
We're moving out, like,
yeah, evolving. Yeah.
Evolving, yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming today, and we look forward to seeing what you get up to in the future. All right.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was an interview with Emilia, who is doing some really great work, being the change that she wants to see. I love that phrase. Like, I just think that's an awesome phrase that we can all use in our own way that's meaningful to us or to you. And she's being the change that she wants to see in the world. She wants to see a change in the way that we use things, especially in the fashion industry. And she's actually going out and doing things and making some very, very beautiful clothes that, you know, you don't have to walk around in a sack and be, you know, taking care of the environment. You can look good too. And I really love that what Victoria from Biku Designs lit, sort of the way she summarized her fashion sense as something a Jedi would wear to dinner. That's very, very cool. I want to look like a Jedi dressed up for dinner. Like, her clothing was a very sort of comfortable look to it, but very stylish as well. So being comfortable and stylish, like, what could be better, right? And I think also it works very well in Japan, as that sort of look is potentially not as popular overseas at the moment, but definitely works well in Japan. So a great way to sort of blend in a little bit if you want to there. Go over and check out her Instagram. It's at Kintsugi, I think it is, and have a look at some of her photos she's got there of things that she's made herself, which is very, very cool. Says me, who can only sew in a straight line, but I do have one of my daughter who's 7 who is getting into her sewing. She's got her own little sewing machine that she gets out sometimes and makes things with. So who knows, maybe she will be doing something similar in the future as well. Yeah, so we talked a lot about being the change you want to see in the world. And so I encourage you as well to go out and do, you know, something that will make even some small change, you know, whether it's even in just in your neighborhood that you want to see in the world, because everything does count. And when we just think of ourselves as, you know, oh, what does it matter if I take my own shopping bag to the convenience store? Well, it does matter, but if you do it 10 times, that's 10 shopping bags less, right? So, just do what you can and start. It's good to start somewhere. And, yeah, I know I definitely struggle with the whole trying to get the people in the store to use my shopping bag. But Amelia actually gave me that advice of just going and looking them straight in the eye when you get there and saying that I don't need a bag, I don't need chopsticks, I don't need all the other stuff you're going to try and give me that I don't need. Just say it straight away and you'll get in the habit and it'll become normal. Yeah. So yeah, that's all for today. I hope you will take part in the celebration, become a member of the celebration team, and help me celebrate the 1 year anniversary of the Transformations podcast, and also you know, get yourself in the draw for that awesome prize that I have, which I'm not telling you about because I want you to come over and help me celebrate. And yeah, let's make it another awesome year for the Transformations with Jane podcast. I'm super excited about what will happen in the next year. So coming up on the podcast soon, I have Jasmine coming along. She is an awesome foodie who loves to create recipes. We're going to be talking about how we can just make cooking and food more enjoyable for everyone coming up in the next few episodes. I also have, I'm very excited to be interviewing someone who I met in California last year. Her name is Silke. She is originally from Germany, but she is also someone who works as a healer. And yeah, she is really, really, really lovely. And I cannot wait to interview her and have her on the podcast soon. So please do look out for those coming soon. And if you would like to be on the podcast, you know, all you have to do is shoot me a message on Instagram at Jane Nakata, which is what Amelia herself did. She got up the courage to ask me to be on the podcast and it happened. Yeah. So definitely, like, this is a pod, if you're listening to the podcast, you know, this podcast is for you. So why not be on it yourself? Yeah. If you have something you'd love to share, whether it's about your business or the way you're, you know, living your life in Japan, then I'd love to have you on as a guest in the near future. So thank you so much for listening today. And I hope to have you listen again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. みなさんこんにちは。お元気ですか？今日のエピソードはエミリアさんでした。エミリアさんはイタリア出身で4年前に初めて日本に来ました。今、東京大学って言ってたんですけど、東大でニューロサイエンス。ニューロサイエンスは日本語でちょっとわかんないんですけど、脳のお勉強をしていますね。うん、なんか、なんか、真剣そうなことなんですね。でも、副業があって、それは、もう、あるものを使ってファッションを作るっていう、なんか自分の服を作ったり、あと、他の人のためにも、ジャケットとか、ワンピースとか作ってます。で、その、使ってる、その古い、ものを使って新しくする、金継ぎっていう、なんか、何かこわ、ちょっと壊れた時に、金を使って直してもっと綺麗になるっていうアイディアで、あるものを使ってもっと綺麗になるの服を作ってるっていうアイディアの、副業があるんですね。で、インスタグラムで見てみたら、すごく素敵な服を、 あのたくさん並んであるので、もし興味があったらぜひ見に行ってください。で、まあ、あのそのね、大学の勉強もしてるし、この副業もしてるんですけど、彼女の目的は、あのそういうファストファッションを使うのは減らしたいんですね。そう、あのファストファッションは便利とか、もうあのワンシーズンでもいいんだけど、そのファストファッションを作るためにあのその環境の被害が多い、あのもう大変なんですね。あとそのファーストファッション捨てるとどこに行ってしまうのか、皆さんは多分知らないと思いますね。なのでファーストファッションを買うんだったら、その前にちょっと勉強してみたらちょっとショックになるかもしれないので、皆さんね、ちょっと調べてみてください。あとあの日常の生活でのなんか使い捨てのものを使うのは、あの皆さんもちょっと減らしてほしいなっていうふうな話もありました。例えば、あのコーヒーカップ、あのそのコンビニのコーヒーを買って、そのカップ一回飲んで捨ててしまうっていうのがもったいないし、あとあのビニール使ったり、そういうあのマイバッグあちこちに持って行って使ってもいいんじゃないとか、マイ箸持ったり、マイフォークとか、あれば、そういう使い捨てのものを減らしたら、もう日本に人がたくさんいるので、みんな一日一つだけのこと、あのその一つのことをやってみたら、もうすごいあの違うことになるんですよね。もし毎日あのコンビニ行くときにビニール使わないんだったら、もう全然違いますね。なので自分からできることで始まりましょうっていうあの話がありました。で、エミリアさんはあのに会ったのは東京のあの服を交換するイベントで会いました。で、皆さんはそのあのまあ誰か着れるぐらいにまだいい服を持ってきて、もうでも自分はもういらないと思ってる服、ただあのクローゼットにあの干しっぱなしみたいな服を持ってきて、で他の人が あこれいいなって持って帰るんですね。でその服の交換イベントで初めて会って、で私と話したかったみたいですね。ずっと私をストーキングして、やっとジェーンがあの話してない時に声かけてくれたんですね。で、あの私がすごい困ってたんですよ。あのその交換イベントでいろんな服があって、何にしようかなって選べなくって、あのエミリアさんとあのもう一人の友達あのアナさんはあの手伝ってくれたんですよ。これがいいねとか、これ合うよ、これ合わないよとか言ってくれたので、すごく楽しくなったんですね、その手伝いで。なのであの私のスタイリストって呼んでるんですね。で今度のイベントはもう多分このポッドキャスト聞いてるんだったら終わってるんですけど、夏にまたあるんですね。で福島にも同じようなイベントあるといいなと思ってるんですけど、どう皆さん、もし欲しかったらぜひ教えてください。あの、なんか仲間集まって作ってみようかなと思います。あと最後に、あの、このポッドキャストは、あの、1年目が終わって、ちょっと祝いするためにセレブレーションっていうのをやりますね。なので皆さんもセレブレーションチームに入りたかったら、このショーノーツに入ってリンクがあります。ここに登録すると、その方法も教えるし、あとその商品、すごくいい商品があるので、あの、当たるためにどんなことをしないといけないのを見てみてください。すごくいい。あの商品なのでぜひあのよりたくさんの人がこのポッドキャストをあの聞けるようになるためにあの手伝いが欲しいですね。なので皆さんよろしくお願いします。じゃあ今日はそれで今日で終わるので、ぜひまた来週よろしくお願いします。バイバイ。Thank you.
podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.